When Macca talks, Cairns listens. John McKenzie, the local you know. For Pacific Toyota, better service, better range, better by far North Queensland. On 846 4CA.
Yeah, 12 minutes past 11. If you're up in the Douglas Shire, please listen. People up there actually, not that long ago, voted not to build a bridge across the Daintree because they felt there was going to be, well, some deterioration in the quality, if you like, the environmental quality of the Daintree rainforest. They might have a relevant point there. So they said, no, we don't want a bridge. We'll continue on with the ferry, but it'll be a different arrangement. Well, there's still some confusion about what's going to happen with the future ferry service across the Daintree. They're talking about building a new one, and you'd think, oh, yeah, that'll take 6 months. No, it's going to take a hell of a lot longer from what I heard this morning. And also, we're not talking about one ferry. Now, we might be talking about more than one ferry, which is interesting too. So please have a listen. It was interesting to see the significant number, the significant, support that no bridge got. There were lots and lots of discussions about it, and some people were passionately in favour of putting a bridge over. But the numbers, when they did the count, showed that the majority said, no, we treasure our rainforest north of the Daintree, and if we had too much coming and going, it would the quality would deteriorate. They may have a relevant point. But we're going to talk now to a gentleman that's got his finger on the pulse of public opinion up there. He's got Mason's Cafe, Mason's Store, Mason's Tours in the Daintree. Lawrence Mason, good morning.
Morning, John. How are you?
I'm well, Lawrence. Just going back historically to this debate about crossing the Daintree, there was a significant, if I remember rightly anyway, a significant proportion in favour of sticking with the ferries. How did the argument go at the time? Why did the outcome of that particular survey deliver what it did?
Oh, look, there's a number of reasons. One of the key ones that you didn't mention is that our roads here are quite narrow and windy and wouldn't be suitable for, say, a two-lane bridge feeding into the area. But, you know, there's other aspects too. I mean, tourism is a competitive game, and a lot of tourists really like that ferry crossing. It sort of sets us apart as a unique destination, and I think a lot of people in tourism didn't want to lose that. And, you know, a lot of us enjoy here too, having that period of time at night where, you know, drunken yobbos can't cross the river because the ferry doesn't run between, you know, 12 and 5 a.m. And it really reduces crime here, John. If someone's going to knock over a business or steal a car or something, they've either got to go out the Bloomfield track or across the ferry. And I think it really contributes to a lower crime rate.
Isn't it funny, a number of people you're saying go up to the Daintree who have never crossed anything in a ferry before? I didn't think of that. That'd be a very significant number, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we get so many people come into our business and say, so what else can we do on the island? They actually think they're on an island.
Isn't this bizarre? Now, you're across what's going on with the future ferry service. Yep. Let's talk about a replacement for what we've got at the moment. They're talking about an extended wait, aren't they?
Well, what they're talking about is building a bigger ferry that is wider. So the council's, in fact, done a lot of research. And what that research has revealed is number one, that they're unlikely to get permits for a second cable ferry across the river. They would need to go through five separate government departments to get permission for that. And the council staff have made the decision, which I think is probably correct, that they probably wouldn't get permission for a second cable ferry. That in itself to me is very disappointing because that's what I thought the ideal solution was. So they've come back, and rather than building a longer ferry, they're building what I'm going to call the Airbus A380 ferry, which is really wide. And they're going to put an extra lane in, and they're also planning to load two lanes at once.
Okay.
And they claim that that will speed things up. But there's a very wide gap in, you know, the possible improvement. They're saying from about 40%, I think, to 90%. And I would say, looking at how efficiently they're loading now, it's more likely to be at the lower end of that scale. But my major concern is that it doesn't matter how big the ferry is you have. Currently, if a fuel truck, which come over a lot to our generators, or a gas truck, we all run gas in our cafes, or an ambulance lights and sirens, or a police car lights and sirens on the way to a DV or something, comes to the ferry stops, waits for it, and then takes it across by itself.
Okay.
So, you know, the council report sort of saying, well, look, there won't be any queuing until 2050 under our modelling. But the reality is, if there's, you know, 50 cars waiting to go on the ferry, which is, say, a full ferry load with the new one,
yeah,
and an ambulance arrives, by the time the ambulance has been taken across and the ferry's come back, there'll be 100, so there'll be a queue.
Oh, okay.
My concern, and I spoke to three of the councillors yesterday about it, is that we don't have any options, not only for these emergency vehicles, fuel trucks, gas trucks, but also for the periods of time the ferry needs to be out of the water for programmed maintenance.
Right.
And so I've suggested, and it is a bit of a thought bubble that I had in the middle of the night, but I've suggested that they consider having a much smaller ferry that's, say, outboard powered, that maybe holds a truck or a bus and a couple of cars, that operates just outside the cable system, and that could be used for emergency vehicles. It could be used for fuel trucks, but more importantly, it could be used as a backup when the ferry was undergoing maintenance in the middle of the wet season. So that's what I've suggested, but I don't know how practical it is in real terms.
Outside the cable system. But when your ferry is out of order, or it's getting maintained or whatever, this little one wouldn't be able to cope with the demand, would it?
Well, they normally do the maintenance in February. And, you know, while obviously it wouldn't cope with any tourist demand at all, I think it would be sufficient for the 5 or 6 days that they have the ferry out of the water. And it would enable people who've got tropical fruit that need to get across the river to get their fruit out. And it would enable a school bus to still cross, for example, so the school kids could get to school. But you're right, it certainly wouldn't cater to tourism. But I don't perceive that with the ferry out of the water in February or early March that I lose much money anyway.
Yeah.
It's not really a peak time.
Let me ask you, Lawrence, about the length of the queue as you've seen it. Does it go right back to the main road there sometimes?
No. I mean, I've heard stories of it going back to the main road, but I honestly doubt that. There's a big long straight before the ferry, and it's certainly quite regularly been back to there recently. And people have been waiting around 2 hours to get on the ferry.
Oh, God.
So we definitely need to improve on that.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, have you heard any sort of time frame for how long it would be to replace the ferry?
The council report says 2026.
Oh.
And I'm sort of pleased to see that because, you know, it takes a long time to get this stuff done. You know, the previous council had a two-ferry solution, which they let in a contract that the contract then fell through. And look, it fell through because they didn't have any permits. So I was, you know, constantly flabbergasted by that previous council because, you know, it's a bit like me saying I'm going to build a new supermarket in Mossman and trying to get tenders to build it without having the permit to build it. And the council's never had a permit for a second ferry, and that's why we are where we are now. Had they applied a few years ago when regulations were a little bit easier, they might have got it, but I just think it's unlikely now. I'd also like to tell you a bit about the bridge, John, because when we were given that choice of a bridge or a ferry, I voted for ferry, assuming it would be two ferries. But part of the reason is because the bridge that was proposed was a two-lane bridge, like a bridge across the Barron River. And these sorts of things are totally inappropriate for the Daintree. If someone with a bit of imagination had designed a bridge that was, you know, shaped like a crocodile, single lane, had traffic lights on it so that, you know, you had 5 minutes one way and 5 minutes the other way, I think I would have been more amenable to it. You know, that I would have been able to say, well, the road's going to cope with that and it looks good and maybe have pedestrian access on it. But, you know, these days we end up with these monstrosities like that walking bridge across Mowbray. Have you seen that?
No.
It's got to be the ugliest thing in North Queensland, honestly. It is just shocking. And, you know, surely we can be a bit more innovative in a tourist region and make things look nice.
That's interesting. Don't go away. Just an update, if you don't mind, before you go. Tourism season, of course, over in Port Douglas, they've been chockers. I presume you've been busy up there as well?
Yeah, we're on target for our biggest July ever. And it has been fantastic. It's sort of underpinned by Australians travelling. And, you know, it's good to see that the tourism organisations are now starting to send, you know, groups of marketers internationally because the forecast is that Australians will start going back overseas in numbers in 23 and 24, and we need to replace them with international arrivals. So it's been interesting seeing how the mix has changed. There's clearly a lot of untapped demand for travel in Australia, and they're all coming to North Queensland.
Yeah. Staff-wise, are you struggling? Because we hear that they can't get accommodation over there. They'll turn up to work at Salsa Restaurant or whatever. We can't get any accommodation. Same cleaning staff, restaurant staff, the whole thing. They just can't find accommodation. They leave town. Are you struggling too?
accommodation-wise, we're pretty lucky. We've got a three-bedroom house as the staff house.
Yeah.
But up until the beginning of July, we had staff problems. We've been really lucky and we've got a good crew, but I'll tell you how I've done it.
Mm.
What I've done is I've said to the staff that have come that they have to pay rent, but if they stay for 4 months, I put the rent in a trust account and I send them an Excel file every fortnight when they get paid.
Well.
If they stay for 4 months, I refund the entire rent for the 4 months.
Well.
Which is over $2,000. So I've got two staff doing that at the moment.
Oh, that's terrific.
And that's just me being a bit innovative, trying to find a way to make people stay. And
isn't that
they're less likely to leave when they're halfway through that process because they lose all their rent money if they go.
Gee, that's interesting. That is a really interesting answer to the crisis. Don't go away. Just do you ever think about playing a more prominent role at council level, Lawrence?
Look, I used to think I wanted to stand for council. My biggest issue is that I have custody of my little girl who's 12, and that's my priority in life at the moment. And I really don't want to be a council representative and miss out on you know, parenting her.
Yes.
But, you know, looking at the councillors now and how restricted they are, I don't know if I want to do it anymore. It seems to me like the council staff run the council and the councillors get a little bit of say here and there.
Mm.
And, you know, these changes that were made a few years ago to how councils run, you know, the reasoning behind the changes was good to stop corruption, but it seems to me that the councillors have sort of been muted in many ways.
Sidelined, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And your council up there wouldn't be the only one in Queensland.
Oh, no, it's right across Queensland.
Exactly.
The problem, you know, and I've been listening to your radio program about, you know, for instance, when the CEO was making decisions because the councillors all had to excuse themselves because they'd had a beer with the person who was applying and stuff like that. I'm not sure. You know, when my daughter's off to university and on her own 2 feet, I'll probably have a look at it again. I would like to do stuff like that, and I do stay on top of what's happening in council because it's so important when you live in the Daintree.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit different up here to keep on top of everything. But, sure. Yeah, we'll decide later, I think.
We'll have this discussion again in 5 or 6 years, Lawrence. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah, that's right, that's right.
Good to talk to you, and thank you. Well, that's an excellent update, isn't it? That's Lawrence Mason on this issue of how do you cross the Daintree and what's the future of it and what's going to be happening in the next 4 or 5 years. He's the owner of Mason's Cafe, Mason's Store, Mason's Tours in the Daintree, Lawrence Mason.